So, Amanda, we're going to talk about Juno.
Yes.
Amanda Alcantara is the editor of Latino USA's website. You're Dominican.
Yes, I am.
And you're a writer.
Yes.
So as a Dominican American writer, what has Juno Diaz meant for you?
For me, Juno Diaz in my life has been almost like a roller coaster, because when I was first exposed to his writing, it came in like a very specific time where I really, really needed it. I had been traveling abroad in Paris for 4 months, and at the time, I was reading Eat, Pray, Love, which is, it's embarrassing, but it's the story of a white lady finding herself and falling in love, and it's like the most stereotypical book for a woman traveling alone. We got to the Rome train station, and I realized that I had lost my book. And I went into the bookstore, and the very first book that I saw was The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Juno Diaz.
That's Juno's most famous book, right?
Yeah. He won a Pulitzer Prize for it. It's the story of a nerdy Dominican kid named Oscar who grows up in New Jersey. And the thing about the book is that it tells the story of Oscar and the history of the Dominican Republic. It's an amazing book. For me, it was very important to have found this book because I had been studying abroad in a place that was nothing like home. I was somewhere where no one looked like me, where very few people at least had like my skin color, where very few people understood my experience. So here was this novel that not only told the Dominican American story, which many people relate to, but also a very specific story of like New Jersey. Listen to this passage right here. Oscar's sister Lola was a lot more practical. Now that her crazy years were over, what Dominican girl doesn't have those? She'd turn into one of those tough Jersey Dominicanas. And I, Maria, am a Jersey Dominicana. Anyway, back to the text. A long-distance runner who drove her own car, had her own checkbook, called men bitches, and would eat a fat cat in front of you without a speck of vergüenza. Also, Maria, a fat cat is a giant sandwich that they sell at Rutgers University, which I would also eat without a speck of vergüenza. So then he goes on to write, when she was in fourth grade, she'd been attacked by an older acquaintance, and this was common knowledge throughout the family, and by extension, a sizable section of Patterson, Union City, and Teaneck. And surviving the hurricane of pain, judgment, and bochinche had made her tougher than adamantine. Okay, first off, all of these towns are very close to where I lived in West New York, New Jersey. And then there's a description about Lola having been attacked by an older acquaintance, which is something that has also happened in my family. This book just really brought me home in a time when I really needed it. As a writer in New York City, your work as a Dominican writer will always be compared to that of Juno Diaz. Before, it was, oh, you're Dominican, I've been to Punta Cana. And later it became, oh, you're Dominican, I've read Juno Diaz. So even though Juno Diaz did not necessarily influence my writing, like on purpose, he did sort of permeate Dominican literature as like someone who made it. And it was amazing to celebrate him.
So it seems like when you were younger, Juno was like a real hero for you.
Yeah. And then last year, I was in this writing circle of Latina women, and his name came up, and then someone said, he's mean. And that was the first time that I ever heard allegations of him mistreating women. It was simply something very subtle. He's mean. Then after that, I realized it was kind of like a secreto a voces.
¿Secreto a voces?
Yes, Secreto a Voces is a secret that everyone knows, but no one really talks about.
An open secret, I guess, is what people would call it, right?
Yes. And I continued on as if I hadn't heard anything. And I realized other women around me also did the same, or other people around me in general also did the same. We acted like nothing happened. But then the allegations came out.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today on Latino USA, we're going to talk about Juno Diaz and the allegations of misconduct against him and how we're dealing with all of this. Juno Diaz is a big name in the literary world. He's written several books, including Drown, The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, and This Is How You Lose Her. Also, most recently, a children's book called Islandborn. Juno has won a Pulitzer, a Guggenheim Fellowship, and he's a MacArthur Genius Award winner. Just this past April, Juno published a piece in the New Yorker magazine that was highly acclaimed, and he came out as a survivor of childhood sexual assault. But here's what happened. In May of this year, allegations came out that Juno had forcibly kissed a writer named Zinzi Clemens. Zinzi wrote on Twitter, quote, "As a grad student, I invited Juno Diaz to speak to a workshop on issues of representation in literature. I was an unknown, wide-eyed 26-year-old, and he used it as an opportunity to corner and forcibly kiss me. I'm far from the only one he's done this to. I refuse to be silent anymore." Now, after that, other women did come forward. A writer named Carmen Maria Machado said that Juno had become enraged and went off on her publicly during a Q&A. Later, she said she does not consider herself a victim of Juno Diaz. Still, several other women accused Juno of being rude or of crossing professional and personal boundaries with them. Juno issued a response through his agent. He said, quote, "I'm listening to and learning from women's stories in this essential and overdue cultural movement. We must continue to teach all men about consent and boundaries," end quote. MIT, where Juno teaches, investigated allegations and cleared Juno. The university wrote, quote, "To date, MIT has not found or received information that would lead us to take any action to restrict Professor Diaz in his role as an MIT faculty member. And we expect him to teach next academic year as scheduled." Allegations are also currently being investigated by the Pulitzer Prize Board, where Juno had served as the chairman. He stepped down from that position in May. We did reach out to Juno for this story, myself and our producers, multiple times over the course of a month. His publicist eventually told us that Juno would not be able to sit for an interview. We also sent a list of specific questions, but did not receive a response to any of those. However, we did receive a statement from Juno's agent saying that the, quote, "overdue vetting of accusations against Juno Diaz is making it clear that he has been wrongly accused and punished," end quote. We also reached out to the women who have openly accused Juno, and they said they didn't want to speak publicly anymore. So today, we're going to talk about Juno Diaz and the Me Too movement. And now, back to Latino USA's Amanda Alcantara.
I've had a hard time with this. Juno was like a hero to me. I was even scared to do this story, but I feel this is something I need to talk about. So I went on something of a quest to figure out, how am I supposed to feel about Juno? Should I still consider him a hero? So I called up Marianela Beliard. Hello, Marianela?
Oh, hi. Hi, how are you?
Marianela is a scholar and a writer and a Dominicana, and she has her own Juno story.
Meeting him in person kind of turned me off from his writing. I guess you never should meet your heroes or know them personally.
About 15 years ago, Marianela was a grad student, and Juno was a new author. He had just published his first book and was on tour promoting it. Marianela emailed him to tell him how much she liked his book and how excited she was that he was coming to speak nearby. They met after the event, and Marianela says that Juno started acting more aggressively towards her. At one point, he took note of her hair. Marianela remembers that Juno said something like, "Wow, a negrita con pelo bueno."
And I said, "What the heck does that mean?"
Juno saying this is a big deal. Basically, he said Marianela was a black woman with quote-unquote good hair, like some backhanded racist compliment.
I mean, you hear that kind of thing all the time. You hear it every day.
But not from someone like Juno, who's supposed to be woke. Juno has spoken up a lot about discrimination against Afro-Dominican and Haitian immigrants and their descendants in the Dominican Republic. So Marianela says it felt like more of a burn coming from him, someone who claimed to know better.
And so to me, it was disappointing that he focused on my hair. And at the same time that it was such a nonsense, it was also very telling coming from somebody as bright and intelligent as he is.
And after that, Marianela didn't read any more of Juno's books. Marianela says she isn't making an allegation against Juno. She doesn't see her story as part of Me Too. Instead, she sees it as an example of this way that Juno used his power to make women feel small.
I found that what I had in common was with the women that were describing that kind of intentional humiliation and mockery. And so that's why I spoke.
After I talked to Marianela, I was really angry. I felt ashamed that I had idolized Juno. In the days after the allegations came out, I actually went on Twitter and I wrote a whole rant. It was only a matter of time regarding Juno. These stories have gone around in Dominican writing circles for the longest. Criticizing Juno was like betrayal. So even now, I'm like, stop talking. Accusing Juno Diaz, if you're a Dominicana, was seen as coming out of jealousy. I've seen Facebook statuses critiquing him actually get deleted. And then I second-guessed myself, and I went and deleted the rant. And I realized later it was that same fear that so many of us have had. What does it mean to criticize Juno Diaz? At the time, it felt like the whole internet was obsessed with the Juno story. I read every opinion piece I could find. Some demanded accountability from Juno and asked them to step down from different boards and posts. Supporters of Juno accused the media of treating him unfairly and lumping him together with men like Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby. But there was this one essay that I kept coming back to. It was by a writer named Aya de Leon. So I called her up. All right, Aya, are you there?
I am.
Aya is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Like me, Aya had also heard rumors about Juno.
I had heard stories about him being just hard on people in workshop and, you know, sometimes blowing up for what seemed like no reason. And then seeing the piece that he wrote in The New Yorker about being a victim of sexual violence, having been raped when he was a young boy, it really put in context the stories that I'd heard. And I still maintain that for him to have disclosed what he did, given the context of toxic masculinity in which men can't publicly disclose any kind of vulnerability like that, I still think that it was bold. And I have compassion for him. And there's a reckoning that needs to happen. There are consequences to those kinds of behaviors.
What those consequences look like isn't clear to Aya. But she doesn't think the literary community should turn into the criminal justice system and just throw Juno Diaz away. After talking to Aya, I agreed with what she said, that there should be some space in the Me Too movement for compassion. I felt like I was finally coming to terms with this. But online, the emotions on all sides were really high. And then one day, as I was reporting this story, I got an anonymous email. A really intense anonymous email. Tumba, tumba, es el mar, son mis pies, no lo sé, ya veré, decía.
Coming up, Amanda keeps searching for answers. Stay with us, no te vayas.
You got 1 week to fix a country's failing preschools. Go. On Rough Translation, a bold experiment by a country to transform its culture of teaching. And it works. Until the very people that most want these schools to succeed start getting in the way. Rough Translation, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we're back, and we've been talking today about Juno Diaz and the Me Too movement. And now here's Amanda Alcantara with the rest of the story.
People's feelings about Juno Diaz are really intense. When I started working on this, some of my mentors were worried about me doing the story. Nothing good would come out of it, they said. Did I really want my name associated with these allegations against Juno Diaz in Google searches? No. Then, as I was reaching out to people to interview, I got an email. It was anonymous and kind of creepy because I never got an anonymous email before. From someone calling themselves Feminist Professor. Feminist, written with a PH. It read, "I heard that you are working on the Juno Diaz story. As you know, since May 4, we have been witnessing the electronic character assassination of Diaz that has been taking place almost daily on social media." The email was like an 8-page investigation with links and screenshots and audio files attempting to discredit some of the women who have accused Juno of being misogynistic. It was really in-depth and intense. I tried finding out who it was from. I can speculate who might have sent it, but I couldn't figure out for sure. That email made me question everything. The allegations, the open secrets I had heard, even my own responsibility as someone telling this story. It felt like Juno was on trial, and everybody in my community was either condemning or defending him. I didn't see myself as either of those. I wanted to speak to one more person. Someone I knew who had also viewed Juno as their literary hero. So I got in touch with Alejandro Heredia.
My name is Alejandro. I am a queer Afro-Latino Dominicano from the Bronx. And I write things.
And when I looked at Alejandro's Instagram, there were actually several posts dedicated to Juno. It's obvious, at least from what I saw in your Instagram, that you admire him.
Yeah, I think Juno Diaz is a phenomenal writer. And his work, I've come back to it since reading it in high school, and it has meant a lot to me to have such an amazing writer represent my culture. The essay that came out that he wrote in The New Yorker, that was very impactful for me because sexual violence is not something that Dominican people talk a lot about, even though it's so prevalent in our culture in so many ways, just like it is in many cultures, right? I mean, I grew up in the Dominican Republic, in Santo Domingo, for the first 7 years of my life. And growing up, I was like molested by also a kid who was around my age, probably like 4 or 5 years older. That's something that I think about often, right? But also how little space we give it in our communities to talk about those things because they matter. They affect our sexual lives, our relationships to ourselves, our relationships to other people. So starting off with that article that he wrote and published in The New Yorker, it was very validating. I think that was one of the most validating things I've ever read in my life. And then the allegations kind of complicated everything because I went from feeling liberated in some ways and validated in some ways and inspired in a lot of ways to feeling very confused, very disappointed, and not really sure what to think or where to go, really.
Could you share, we printed what you wrote on your Instagram page, if you feel comfortable sharing.
For sure.
Could you read what you wrote?
Oh, I did write this. So as a teenager, I used Junot Diaz's book to legitimize my shame of being Dominican. Took from it only that everything wrong with me and my family was attributed to our culture, that the fuku itself was being Dominican. Yet, as much as I now critique Junot for all the things he does wrong, I also have a photo of him up on my wall because his work paves the road for the rest of us artists in the Dominican diaspora. I come back to this 6 years later with a deep knowledge of myself and my people, hoping to make new meaning out of this novel.
So this was the caption that you have for an image of Junot Diaz's book.
Yeah, that was after I read it, after having not read it for about 5 to 6 years. I went back to it and got some new stuff from it. So
do you still have a picture of him up on your wall?
I do still have it up on my wall. And I don't know how to feel about it, just like I don't know how to feel about a lot of this. I think in some ways, Junot Diaz is not someone as a person that I would like to look up to. I think he's disappointed us greatly. But I think I will always go back to his books. I mean, it's a very devastating moment for the literary community because he has been our big person. But I also think it's an opportunity for us to center women and to center queer people and to center the varying voices that exist within the Dominican diaspora because there are so many experiences and things to be written about. We are so grand. We are grand people. We have so many stories to tell.
When I first started working on this story, I wasn't clear on what position to take. I felt hurt by what Junot had done and stood in solidarity with the women who have spoken up. I worried that even by doing this story and talking about this, I would inadvertently harm the women who had shared their stories. But now, I think I know where I stand. I don't think I should view Junot Diaz as a hero. Maybe he's such an amazing writer because he embodied not only the beauty of my community, but also the pain, trauma, and yes, the misogyny. His characters feel real because Junot is real. And it's painful that that also means he's a machista, in the way other men in my life have been, where they make me feel small and powerless. I keep thinking of the cycles of violence, how hurt people hurt people. Recently, a man who married into my family became obsessed with me. He stalked me, saying disgusting things that at times felt threatening. Eventually, I had to change my number and get roommates. If he apologized, would I forgive him? It depends. I might still look over my shoulder sometimes or panic when I get a phone call from an unknown number. But to me, there's power in forgiveness and letting go for my own sake, as long as the apology is genuine. With Junot, it doesn't feel like it's my place to decide. But what I am certain of is that there are many, beyond Junot, who can and should represent us.
Our thanks to Amanda Alcantara for that story. Amanda is the digital media editor here at Latino USA. She's also the editor of La Galería, which is a magazine focused on Dominican women. This episode was reported by Amanda Alcantara and produced by Ashley Cleek. It was edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our fellows are Maya Cueva and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. Winecoat Foundation. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the financial hurricane facing Puerto Rico now.
So it was not feasible. And eventually, like all bubbles in our capitalistic system, it exploded.
That's next time on Latino USA.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.